and thanks for joining us on Chicago Tonight, Black Voices. I'm Brandis Friedman. Here's what we're looking at.
Our community needs these investments now.
Alder people narrowly pass a controversial new borrowing deal to repair city infrastructure. 21 men at Stateville Prison say they've been left behind to die after the rest of the population was transferred months ago over poor conditions.
Everything dope about America comes from Chicago.
From bus tours to a new museum gig, urban historian Sherman Dilla Thomas keeps sharing his love for Chicago history.
Because we are the steppers capital of the world.
And we explore the culture of the popular Chicago dance style known as steppin'. And now to some of today's top stories. A Chicago man is facing murder charges for six separate killings, all happening in 2020. Chicago police and the Cook County State's Attorney announced the charges today against 21-year-old Antonio Reyes. Reyes was first arrested at the age of 17, accused of a murder that happened in June 2020 in the 5800 block of South Rockwell Street. Today, police believe he also committed five more fatal shootings over the course of the year across the southwest side before he was arrested for that first one. Police were able to tie shell casings found at one of the crime scenes to the other scenes, and they say his social media footprint was also a factor in tracing the shootings to the suspect. Reyes has pleaded not guilty to all of the charges during today's arraignment. 270,000 Illinois residents have had their medical debts totally wiped out, a combined total of $345 million, thanks to a statewide pilot program.
In a healthy and functioning society, no one should fall into financial ruin simply because they got sick. Nobody should be burdened with the kind of debt that changes their lives and ruins it.
Governor J.B. Pritzker says the state only spent $2 million to accomplish the feat, and his 2026 budget proposal designates another $15 million to the cause, pushing to delete $1 billion in medical debt. Residents eligible for the program will be notified by mail. The head of the Chicago Park District is the most recent member of Mayor Brandon Johnson's administration to step down. Rosa Escareño is resigning as superintendent after 3 years running the agency and 35 years in public service, dating back to Mayor Eugene Sawyer. Escareño came to the job during the Lightfoot administration in the wake of a scandal involving sexual harassment and misconduct in the Park District's lifeguard corps and the agency's response to it. In a statement, the mayor expressed his gratitude for her service and hailed her accomplishments on the job. And a beloved Southside barbecue spot wins a prestigious James Beard Award. Lim's Barbecue in Chatham is one of six recipients of the James Beard America's Classic Award. The James Beard Foundation says the award is given to independently owned restaurants with timeless appeal and is beloved in their region for food that reflects character and cultural traditions of its community. This year's selections join more than 100 restaurants across the country that have received the award since 1998, including at least one in Chicago, Who's Hungry? You can find out more about all of those stories on our website, WTTW.com/news. Up next, a borrowing plan narrowly passes city council. Heather Sharone on what'll fund.
Chicago Tonight, Black Voices, is made possible in part by the support of these donors.
By the narrowest possible margin, the Chicago City Council approved a plan to borrow $830 million to rebuild Chicago's crumbling roads, sidewalks, and bridges. While supporters say the plan would make crucial repairs possible, opponents warn the deal would saddle the next generation of Chicagoans with a massive amount of debt. Let's listen to today's debate.
We need to become self-sufficient. I think this is very wise and very smart and very beneficial to make sure that we can self-sustain ourselves for the future, for the infrastructure that we need.
If you find yourself in a hole, the first thing you do is you stop digging. Short-term benefits aren't worth decades of financial harm. We can fund important projects and invest in Chicago, but we don't have to mortgage our children's future and saddle them with reckless debt to do it.
And our Heather Sharon joins us now with more. Heather, final vote was 26 to 23. Why was it so close, and why was this proposal so controversial?
Well, it really found itself caught between a rock and a hard place. The rock in this case is the city's precarious financial condition. The city already owns nearly $29 billion in general obligation debt on top of the city's nearly $37 million in pension debt. So the thought of borrowing more money was really hard for some older people to stomach. The hard place was the fact that many older people don't trust Mayor Brandon Johnson to spend this money the way that he says that he will. Instead, this proposal was accused of being sort of a slush fund for various projects and to sort of help the Chicago public schools figure out how to make a pension payment it is struggling to cover and to cover the upcoming teachers' contract, which is yet to be resolved. Now, that's not true, but the mayor had a hard time convincing the older people that this was just for infrastructure, even though most people love infrastructure, right? Who doesn't like avoiding a pothole on the way to work?
We love a good road or, you know, bridge that functions, Heather. How did the mayor get it passed, though, despite this firestorm?
Well, he relied on his base, just like he did in the 2023 election. This passed with the support of all but four members of the city council's Black caucus and the entire Progressive caucus. Now, had it not done that, it would not have passed because it was opposed by conservative older people, including some who have aspirations for the big chair themselves, hoping to carve out a more fiscally responsible lane they hope could help them in the 2027 mayoral election, which, believe it or not, is right around the corner.
And nobody's more ready for that than Heather Sharon. Before we let you go, what projects did the city plan to pay for with this borrowed money?
So most of this money will go to roads and bridges and sidewalks. A big chunk of it, though, will be spent at the direction of the individual older person, and they can use it on really whatever they want, in their words, as long as it's a lasting improvement. The big issue is that the city's not going to start paying down this debt for nearly 20 years under the schedule outlined by CFO Jill Jaworski on last night's show. And that, they say, is a problem because who knows what the city's financial condition will be in the next 5 years, much less the next generation.
Who knows? All right. Heather Sharon, as always, thank you.
Thanks, Brandis.
And you can read Heather's full story on our website. It is all at WTTW.com/news. Most men were transferred out of Stateville Correctional Center near Joliet last fall because of poor conditions. But one group wasn't included in that order, the healthcare unit. Now, the last 21 men at Stateville say they've been, quote, left behind to die. Our reporter, Blair Paddock, joins us now with more. And Blair, I know you've been covering this. We've worked on it together quite a bit. But why was the healthcare unit not transferred out of Stateville?
Yeah, so when a federal judge ordered that most of the men were to be transferred outside of Stateville in the fall, she said that compared to the main housing unit in Stateville, which had concrete falling from ceilings, mold, a host of other issues, the healthcare unit in part didn't have concrete falling from ceilings. And so the men could stay there. So now those 21 men, the reason that they've been given as to why they're still housed in that unit are because of their medical needs. As I understand it, quite a few of the men need dialysis, which they can get at that facility.
So what are the conditions like for the men there?
Yeah, the men that I've been writing to that are inside of that unit say that it's like being, it's third world conditions. They are in extreme restrictive housing conditions, sometimes left 24 hours a day in their cell. When they get yard time, there are no activities outside in the yard. They say that they feel like statues in the yard because of that. And there's no programming. They say no time in the chapel, no time in Stateville's barbershop, no educational programs, jobs, really anything for folks inside. On top of that, they say that the food that they're getting is repeating several days in a row, and it's sometimes not meeting people's dietary needs.
You also reported on a lawsuit over this from the disability rights group Equip for Equality. What do they allege?
They allege that IDOC, Illinois Department of Corrections, Acting Director Latoya Hughes, is violating the Americans with Disabilities Act as well as the Rehabilitation Act by keeping these men inside in unduly restrictive and isolating conditions compared to people without disabilities because of their disabilities. It also alleges that that IDOC is restricting people from programming because of their disabilities.
And also, Blair, lastly, you know, put this into context for us with, you know, the closure and the rebuild of Stateville.
Yeah, so the transfers from Stateville in the fall are part of the state's pitch to close and rebuild Stateville Correctional Center, as well as Logan Correctional Center, a women's facility in central Illinois. And the transfers are part of this five-year, the state says, long process to close the facility. Both facilities found to have hundreds of millions in deferred maintenance. And like I mentioned at the top, some pretty poor conditions. So the state's still in the very early process of all of this, with the Stateville transfers being the largest sort of visible movement in this whole process.
Okay. All right. Blair Paddock, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And you can read Blair's full story on our website. It's all at WTTW.com/news. Up next, an urban historian on his new position. Chicago urban historian Sherman Dilla Thomas is expanding his history lessons from social media to the museum. He's got a new gig at the DuSable Black History Museum as a brand ambassador and social media chief. It's just one of his many projects, from giving bus tours to giving TikTok lessons on the city's lesser-known history. Here with more on the new job is the urban historian himself, Sherman Dilla Thomas. Welcome to Chicago Tonight. It is good to have you in the studio.
Happy to be here. Good to see you.
You as well. So what does it mean for you to be taking on this role at DuSable? Because you called it sort of a dream job.
Yeah, it is certainly a dream job. A full circle moment, right? I was a kid going to DuSable with my parents, and we lead our Chicago Mahogany tours. If it's a South Side tour, that's where I depart from. So done a lot of walking tours through the museum and help bring a lot of foot traffic. So it seemed appropriate for this connection, and I'm really excited to kind of help grow their audience in the social media space and to learn more about how museums run.
So what is your vision? What would you say your vision is for the role? I know you've only been on the job for like less than a month, but how do you plan to sort of take what DuSable does and blend it with what you do?
Well, I want to amplify the stories of the DuSable, so that'll be the first thing that we're going to do. The second thing is to add a historical component, right? You know, if you were not here in the 80s, you don't know what was on the display at the DuSable in the 80s, but I have access to the archives and also to the special collection storage, and maybe we could bring out those old artifacts and do social media posts on that. We also want to be a connector. I think here in Chicago, we should all have like these cultural institution bucket lists. And in order to call yourself an awesome Chicagoan, you need to have visited the DuSable, visited the National Museum of Mexican American Art, or the Puerto Rican Heritage Museum, or the Swedish American Heritage Museum, or the Polish American Heritage Museum. So I'm going to help come up with like a punch card, and you know, we'll have special banquets for individuals who have visited all the cultural institutions. And I think finally, just because most of my audience is on social media and of a younger demographic, I want to introduce the museum to that demographic, and then they become our lifelong members and lifelong patrons.
Certainly seems like also a way, as you've already been doing, right, to get younger people more interested in a museum, because a lot of times you hear museum and you're like, oh, that's something old people do, right?
Right.
But it sounds like what you can do is to get more folks, younger
folks.
Yeah,
you know, get them to be excited for it in that little 60-second reel on Instagram, right? And then hopefully that drives them to the museum to see that thing in person.
There are a lot of, you know, sort of common narratives about Chicago that can focus on tragedy, right? But these perceptions, they have an impact on communities.
Very much so. You know, this is a phrase that my sister Tanika Johnson and I are trying to get people to stop saying, and that's don't go. right? As soon as you kind of paint a whole neighborhood with a broad stroke because of a singular incident, we're hurting them economically. You're hurting the ability for people to choose that neighborhood to live in. And then what you're also doing, if you're not thinking about it, is you're putting the tax burden on one side of the city. So if you're from the north side of Chicago, you should certainly want the west side, and the south side should do better. And so we shouldn't be painting it as a negative space. There's no such thing as a bad neighborhood in Chicago.
Right. And we had Tanika Lewis Johnson, along with her co-author, on the show several weeks ago, talking about their book, Don't Go, and the stories that it tells. Tell me a little bit about the work that you do and how you work to combat some of those narratives.
Well, one thing I say on the bus every day is once you learn the history of a space, then your perspective should change about that place. And when you have a perspective shift, you're bound to have respect for that space. And so what I do as a historian, what I do on my tours with my social media content, is I teach you about the amazing historic stuff that comes from places like Englewood, right? You know, what would the world be without a person like Gwendolyn Brooks, who graduated from Englewood High School, or Robert Lawrence Jr., who's the first ever black astronaut? He grew up in Englewood, right? You know, I want to teach you about Mavis Staples and what she was doing in South Shore, but also the fact that Carla Hayden, the country's first ever black librarian of Congress, she went to school, South Shore High School, right? And so I think if you learn that, then you appreciate that, and you can't help but to move better in spaces when you respect it. You know, it reminds me of Grandma's front room with the plastic on it, right? That was just a space you respected because you knew what it took for her to get that furniture.
Like you always say, everything dope in America originated in Chicago.
Yeah.
So despite all the popularity that you've gained through TikTok and through YouTube, you know, you still proudly for a while, you held on to your job at ComEd until it changed. And then, of course, it ended. Why was it important to you at the time to keep that position, to be with ComEd and to have that day job, in addition to all of the history that you were doing?
Yeah, well, I'm definitely still a little sad about that. That was pretty ill what they did to me, right? That shouldn't be done to anybody. Having said that, though, I come from my dad and my grandpa. They all worked jobs for 20, 30 years, and they got to retire, and they got that watch. So part of that was something that I wanted for myself. Then I built an amazing family at ComEd. I was there for almost 14 years. I was a union steward. You know, there isn't a building downtown that I haven't been in. So when I find pride in the fact that I was part of the crew that brought power back to the Sears Tower when it lost power in 2018, or the amount of people I helped save who were in elevators trapped because the power went out, and I go in and do my thing. But the other thing is just to show an example that you can work hard and pursue your interests at the same time.
And of course, you mentioned your time at ComEd and being sad about what happened.
Yeah.
Your position changed to an office position from the area operator, and then eventually you were let go from there. We'll give ComEd a call also just to be able to hear their side of it as well. But I imagine doing this new job, though, it probably allows you to pursue your passion in a way that having a very different kind of job didn't allow for.
Yeah, it aligns with my mission right now, you know, being the brand ambassador for the DuSable Museum, being able to tell their stories. You know, I'm already telling Chicago stories. I already do a great deal of traveling, giving guest lectures and things of that nature. And so to do that on behalf of the museum kind of lines up with what I'm already doing. And it's a beautiful partnership that's going to lift up both of our platforms and the work that we're doing separately, as well as what we're going to do collectively.
How do you share your unique knowledge of history with the people on your bus tours? We mentioned that.
Oh, a number of amazing ways. Thankfully, the bus is retrofitted with technology. So if we're in front of the parking lot that's on 47th and King Drive, I can populate pictures of the old Regal Theater. And I can tell you how that's a space where, you know, they discovered the Jackson 5. We also play archival video. So it gives people a chance to see what was. And when you see what was, you are certainly inspired as to what is possible. We go by historic houses like Louis Armstrong's house. If we're in Humboldt Park, I take you to the site where Frank Baum wrote Wizard of Oz. You know, if we're in McKinley Park, we're going to talk about, you know, Walt Disney's time at that high school. So it's designed to not only lift up the history, but we talk about some stuff that kind of stinks too, right? When we go by vacant lots in South and West Side, we talk about the redlining. We talk about the land sale contracts that created these vacant lots. I have people count the amount of grocery stores they see on my tours. So that way they can visually recognize that, you know, a food desert from a spot that's not a food desert.
So you've done a lot of things, right? And obviously you've just got this new job. You've only been on it for about 5 minutes.
Yeah.
But we keep seeing you grow. And so I'm curious about what's next for Dilla. What's the next big dream or the next big thing you want to do?
So I would like to see my show, You Don't Know Shy, on somebody's network, which we're having a lot of
currently
conversations.
Currently on YouTube.
Yes, on YouTube. So please check it out. I would love to see that on network space. And I'm also having conversations with the people at Steppenwolf and others to kind of like do a Chicago history play. Maybe even a Chicago history, like, scripted series or feature film. But to be honest, I'm happy doing what I'm doing right now. I love doing the bus tours. If I don't do anything else but lift up the history and the people of Chicago, I'll die a happy man.
All right. You're clearly in the best place for it. Nobody I'd rather spend the last few days of Black History Month than the TikTok historian himself, Sherman Dilla Thomas. Thank you so much for joining us. Good to see you.
Oh, thank you. Good to see you.
Of course. And speaking of Chicago history, up next, we explore the culture of steppin', a dance style popularized in Chicago. Chicago is the steppin' capital of the world. That's if you ask the godfather of steppin' himself, DJ Sam Chatman, who's credited with coining the term. And though the dance craze's popularity has spread across the country, no one can do it quite like the hometown originators. This Black History Month, we take a look at the culture and history of steppin'.
I started on the West Side, Barber's Peppermint Lounge, MGM Grand. From there, it just exploded.
Before steppin' became steppin', it was known as bopping. But DJ Sam Chatman coined the phrase in the 1960s after admiring a friend's moves on the dance floor.
Draper would be dancing with a lady and I would say, step on Draper, step on Draper. And the word stepping, next thing I knew, I was putting it on a flyer.
Its popularity expanded, and other fellow Westsiders became inspired to host parties to resist the disco era.
We had nowhere to go. So I had this idea that, hey, I'm going to keep our music alive.
A woman fondly known as Black Mary Harris hosted steppin' events for more than 60 years. At 17 years old, she says she became a residential sweetheart for a social club. And the environment inspired her to host her own parties.
We almost got shut down because we had so many people up there.
Before graduating to big venues and clubs across the South Side, Harris and her crew used whatever location was available.
Anybody that had a basement that we could use, we would pay them a certain amount of money and fill out those index cards, pass them out, and had a DJ, and we just danced all night. It took me almost 4 years to get one party off the ground, and look what that party has turned into. We're all over the world now.
Harris says hosting a steppers event doesn't require much, but a few essentials.
The music had to be off the chain, and the venue had to be bathrooms, good parking, and a good dance floor. Back in the day when we learned to dance, it was always, if the man could do it, I could do it. So you're not going to outdo me. Because if you do it, baby, I'm coming back with it.
Steppin' requires a certain skill set.
They work on, they practice these moves over and over, and they get them down, they perfect them.
If he did something and I did something, or we did it together, it was the blendingness, it was the footwork, it was the mannerism of how you move your body.
And though other cities have adopted steppin', Chicagoans can always claim the original set.
We are the steppers' capital of the world.
Nobody can do it like Chicago, because first of all, Detroit, Atlanta, but Chicago, we do it 7 days a week, every day, and all of them will be packed.
And in addition to their moves, steppers always have to bring their looks.
You go to a steppers event, everybody is sharp. The colors, the outfits, your shoes had to be right, you know, because, you know, everybody watching your feet.
And what's more, Stepan provided people with a space to let loose and relieve their worries.
I would tell them when I first started my party, leave all that mess outside. You come in here, free spirit, have a good time. Pick it up when you leave my party.
And even as new dances emerge, Chatman remained confident that Stepan will never leave the dance floor.
Where did I see Stepan going? And I said, we haven't even scratched the surface, because I'm noticing parents and grandparents are teaching their children, their babies, to step.
Stepan lives on, and though it originated on the west side, Stepan is just as popular on the city's south side and, of course, throughout Chicago. And that's our show for this Wednesday night. Ponchki Day is next week, so check out our website for five local bakeries that serve up that classic treat. And join us tomorrow night at 5:30 and 10. Now, for all of us here at Chicago Tonight Black Voices, I'm Brandis Friedman. Thank you for watching. Stay healthy and safe, and have a good night.
Closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, a Chicago personal injury and wrongful death firm that supports free educational initiatives in the legal profession.